श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। हरे कृष्णा। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we're reading from chapter 4, this is chapter 11, and text 22, chapters entitled Swayambhuva Manu advises Dhruva Maharaj. Today is also the Is it appearance or disappearance? Disappearance of Lochan Das Thakur. It seems like now we are bringing that into the forefront, mentioning the glories of these great souls on their days. I think last night there was a talk. I'll just mention because I think it's both appropriate and what we say in line with Vaishnava culture to honor such great souls on their appearance and disappearance day. There's a lot about Lochan Das Thakur in terms of his contribution to the Vaishnava culture, philosophy, and teachings of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is the author of one of the most prominent biographies of the life of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mangala. The original name of Vrindavan Das Thakur's work on the life of Lord Chaitanya was Sri Chaitanya Mangala. Later it was changed, it says it was changed by Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj and others to Chaitanya Bhagavat, giving it the prominence of the most authorized version of the life of the teachings and of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Lochan Das Thakur has also given a great contribution. There's much in it that is unique and, what we say, very, very detailed, especially the marriage of Lord Chaitanya and Vishnu Priyan. That covers a very big section, along with Lord Chaitanya's taking the Sarasada. There's one story that is quite remote in his particular life, which probably not too many of you heard of it, and which you might find quite interesting. I'll just mention this pastime when we begin the Srimad Bhagavatam class. I like this pastime. He had a child marriage. He was married at a very, very young age to a very, very young girl. She was even, I think, younger than 12 years old. She was about 10 years old. Of course, we know that in Vaishnava culture that is done. It's the standard. Srila Prabhupada talks about his own life in this regard. He said he had three sisters. One sister got married at 11. Another one was 10. And then his other sister, she was 12 years old and she wasn't married, and his mother was really in anxiety. And then Prabhupada said, finally she didn't receive marriageable age. She didn't get married at 12. So it's not uncommon for girls to, and men to get married at a very young age. And that way, chastity and what we say faithfulness becomes what we say strong in the life of both as they fix their minds on each other and on their responsibilities in Krishna consciousness. So Lochan Das was not an exception. But he left his home, and later he became very active in devotional life. And he joined one ashram, one great associate of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Marahari Sakkar, was the considered to be the guru of the ashram. And he took shelter and direction from Marahari Sakkar. We sing in the evening the Gaur Aarti, Nana Hari, Adi Kodi, Chamaradilala. That is the Narahari who found Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the Acharya. He was a very intimate associate of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So intimate that we know how Lord Chaitanya did not like to be called the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He would block his ears. But if Narahari Sakar did refer to him that way, he wouldn't say anything. He was very much, you know, pleased by the great devotion of Srila Narahari Sakar. So Lord Chandas Thakur took shelter of this personality, and he stayed in the ashram for at least 10 or more years. Finally, one man who knew about his previous history came to the ashram and said to Narahari, he said, "This man is a grihastha. He's not a brahmachari. He's living in your ashram as a brahmachari, but he has a wife. She lives in this village, and she hasn't seen her husband for the last 10 years. So he has a responsibility. He's married." Narahari was concerned. He approached Lochan. Lochan admitted that, yes, this was true. Tell him you go back. You go back to your wife. So he did. Following the instructions of his spiritual master, he went to the village. It had been such 10 years or more. So he had forgotten what it was like, because he was so young in that age. So he was looking for the village, and he saw this young lady pulling water from the well. So he approached her and asked her about this family in this village. She pointed, just practically right where he was. This is the place. So then later on, he found out that that was actually his wife that was drawing water from the well. He had actually forgot what she had looked like. So, in finding his responsibilities, following the instructions of his spiritual master, he went back and tried to live as a grihastha. But it didn't work. He didn't have any inclination after training 10 years in the ashram as a brahmachari. He simply was reading Bhagavatam. And his wife realized that this person is not a husband. He's more inclined to devote full devotional life. So she said, "I give you my blessings, you can go." And he did. And he left, enthusiastically. And he went back and joined the ashram of Narahari Sakar. So that's a little story about the life of Lochan Das Thakur. And of course, later on he went to write the famous Chaitanya Mangalam. Okay, Lochan Das Thakur Ki Jai. So, Srimad Bhagavatam. Kechit Karma Vadatyena Svabhavanna Paro Nipa Eke Kalam Parandaivam Pumsankanam Utapare Kechikana Vada Enam Svabhavanna Paro Nipa Eke Kalam Parandaivam Pumsakana Utapare Kechikana Vadapyanam Svabhavanna Parinipa Ike Kalam Paridhavan Pumsankana Utapare.
Amen.
Karma. Fruit of activities. Vadanti. Explain. Enam. That. Svabhavam. Nature. Apare. Others. Nirpa. My dear King Dhruva. A.K. Sam. Kalam. Time. Pare. Others. Daivam. Fate. Pumsa. Of the living entity. Kalam. Desire. Uta. Also. Apare. Others. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The differentiation among varieties of life and their suffering and enjoyment is explained by some to be the result of karma. Others say it is due to nature, others due to time, others due to faith, and still others say that it is due to desire. So now, Swayambhu Manu was explaining the different philosophical considerations that people put forward of why suffering happens. Prabhupada's purport gives everything clear. There are different types of philosophers: mimamsakas, atheists, astronomers, sexualists, and so many other classifications of mental speculators. The real conclusion is that our work only that binds us within the material world and different varieties of life. How these varieties have sprung up is explained in the Vedas. It is due to the desire of the living entity. The living entity is not a dead stone. He has different varieties of desires or karma. The Vedas say kamo karshit. The living entities are original part of the Lord, like sparks of a fire, but they have dropped to this material world, attracted by a desire to lord it over nature. That is a fact. Every living entity is trying to lord it over the material resources to the best of his ability. This karma or desire cannot be annihilated. There are some philosophers who say that if one gives up his desires, he again becomes liberated. But that is not at all possible to give up desire, for desire is a symptom of a living entity. If there were no desire, then the living entity would be a dead stone. Srila Narottam Das Thakur therefore advises that one turn his desire towards serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then desires become purified, and when desires are purified, one becomes liberated from all material contamination. The conclusion is that the different philosophers' theories to explain the varieties of life and their pleasure and pain are all imperfect. The real explanation is that we are eternal servants of God, and that as soon as we forget this relationship, we are thrown into this material world where we create our different activities and suffer or enjoy accordingly. We are drawn into this material world by desire, but the same desire must be purified and employed in the devotional service of the Lord. Then our disease of wandering in this universe under different forms and conditions will end. Om Agyan Timidandasya Gina Jina Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stabditam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swam Padantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai. So this is a ongoing discussion. It's one of the most important discussions, or not important, one of the most prominent topics of discussion probably in the world: suffering. Really, the whole principle of life is to do two things, at least material life, and that is to access as much happiness and enjoyment as one can, materially, and to avoid suffering. The whole material energy, or let me say, the activities of the materialist in the material energy, are simply focused on these two things in essence. Of course, they may do different things, but it's how to enjoy, or how to experience happiness, pleasure, and how to avoid difficulties, sufferings. But guess what? It's not possible. It's not possible to either do either one. Because material energy is constituted in such a way that one cannot enjoy. Sorry to tell you that, but that's the way it is. There is no happiness here. When Krishna says something, when he wants to make it a point, he says it again. And he makes this point again and again in Bhagavad Gita. He says, Dukkhalayam Asasratam. This place is temporary, it's miserable. The word is translated not unhappy, but miserable. Miserable place. And he says, Anitya Asubham. And in the ninth chapter, he says the same thing again, that this place is temporary. It's full of suffering. So everyone is trying to enjoy in a place where there is no enjoyment. So when we hear how Srila Prabhupada speaks about this philosophy, he uses very strong words to describe the materialists who are trying to find happiness. He says they're fools and rascals. I was listening to a tape. He says the difference between an sane person and an insane person is a sane person realizes there's no happiness here and tries to find where there is real happiness. And an insane person keeps trying in different ways to try to experience happiness. What is that? Apanyapina pasyati. From the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Sukadeva Goswami says that people see that they're suffering, and in their suffering, everyone is always suffering, and they see the activities that cause the suffering, and yet attached. Do the same thing, get the same result in one form or another. So philosophers have dealt with this subject of suffering. But we might say, in the real sense of the term, that any activity that leads one away from one's goal of life or Krishna consciousness is another form of suffering, even if it brings some type of so-called material happiness. Prabhupada was discussing this point with his devotees on a morning walk, and he was explaining that there's no happiness in this material. So the devotees were explaining different things. And finally one devotee said, but Prabhupada, we have three modes, we know that. And Krishna explains what is the nature of the mode of goodness. And the mode of goodness, are people in the mode of goodness happy? Prabhupada's answer was quite interesting. He said, the quality or the main characteristic of the mode of goodness is knowledge. And he says, that knowledge tells you there's no happiness here. So that's why when we hear such statements as pious and impious, it's all impious. Happiness and distress, it's all distress. Why? Because it leads one away from real happiness. Material happiness is even worse than material distress, because material happiness gives the idea that there is some happiness here, and then you fall into the illusion and keep pursuing that same illusion, which takes the mind and consciousness away from looking for real happiness. A person who is suffering by material standards may be a little bit more aware of the reality of this material existence. But everyone is suffering in one form or another. So here, the philosophers are explaining, or different types of philosophers, What is the cause of suffering? This is the essential principle that's being discussed here. What causes suffering? And there's one class of person called the Mimamsakas. They say that you want to, the karma Mimamsakas, Krishna dealt with this in the Govardhan Puja Leela, how if you simply do your material duty, and you do it according to religious principles, then the Supreme Lord is bound by your fruit of activities. He must give you the results of your activities. He's more like, he's sitting in the background, and if you just follow, if you do it right, you get like material prosperity, you get, you know, wealth or position, whatever is considered within the category of material success. And if you do it wrong, you suffer. So God, he's just kind of neutral. He just sits there just giving happiness and distress. It's more like keep score, scorekeeper. So that means God is under the influence of fruitive activities. And some karma mimamsas are actually atheists who say there's no God. It's simply material nature is giving the results of one's activities. So if you just understand a little bit about the laws of material nature and how they work, and you can disentangle yourself from the forms of suffering. That's it. There's another class who basically say that it's all material nature. That's all. So differently, just manipulate the material nature. There's no God in control. There's no nothing. It's simply by your activities. It's similar to the karma mimamsas. Karma mimamsas may acknowledge the Supreme Being, but the atheists or even the Mayavadis, they say it's simply by manipulation of material energy. That's all. So there's different types of philosophers. Others say it's your fate. You know, by fate. Well, what is fate? We say that what is fate? It seems like fate and karma are similar in definition. One's fate. And that's a way of explaining something that you don't understand. It's like almost like the word instinct. When Prabhupada heard that word instinct, he immediately threw it out. When like just like a person is doing something by instinct, or an animal, especially they say animals act instinctively. But what is instinct? It means that I don't know. It's really what it means. Instinct is actually how things are happening, is that in the heart of the living entity, super soul is simply giving the results of one's activities, and it's happening in a certain way. And for animals, they're being guided by the Supreme Lord within the heart according to their particular body, that's all. So the so-called, what we say, philosophers, scientists, and humanitarians, philanthropists, they just come up with these new words in order to somehow describe something they can't understand. That's it. But here, it says everything is based on desire. Or desire is what motivates a person for activity. And by desire, one either acts or speaks in such a way which causes to put the material energy and activity in a certain direction, and one gets a result. The laws of karma. But how karma works is so difficult to understand. It's impossible to understand. The laws of karma are so difficult to understand and so intricate. When Dhritarashtra, at the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, he approached Krishna. He said, Krishna, I had 100 sons, and they were all killed, and I was born blind. Why? Krishna was compassionate, so he revealed his history. He said, this is in the Mahabharata, that 50 lifetimes ago, you were a hunter, and you shot a flaming arrow into a nest of birds, and there were 100 birds in the nest, and they all died by the fire, and the mother bird got away blinded. Told him it's karma. And Peter Oster, what could he say? He accepted it, but then he was quite puzzled. He said, well, why 50 lives? Why did I have to wait 50 lives before this karma came? And Krishna explained, he said, to have a son means to have pious activities. So it took you 50 lives to develop enough pious activities where you could have 100 sons, and then your karma cashed in. It's like if you're broke and you owe money to somebody, they'll just patiently wait until you get some money, and then they'll come by to collect. In the meantime, you have to make the money. So karma is like that. So no one can trace out the intricacies of karma. But everything is based on desire. But how does desire work? Where does desire come? Desire is the nature of the living entity. The real desire of the living entity is to love and serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when that desire becomes, what we say, diverted towards this material energy, that is called material activities. So it's desire that propels us to come to this material world, and it's desire, a wrong desire, I should say, that keeps us in the material world. So the way out, or the way back, is to change the desire. Simply changing activities doesn't change the desire. It may help, but ultimately the desire has to be purified. Now, when Parikshit Maharaj heard about the hellish conditions that the living entities were going through from Sukadeva Goswami, which they had to suffer, he describes the 28 hells. Parikshit Maharaj was overwhelmed with compassion, thinking, why do they have to suffer so much? Isn't there some atonement? And basically, Sukadeva Goswami describes atonement, but he said, ultimately, the only atonement is to chant the Holy Krishna, the holy names of the Lord, to engage in devotional service. Because desires cannot be simply replaced. They have to be replaced with purified desires. So that's what Prabhupada is mentioning here. That simply these different philosophers who have different conceptions of why the living entity suffers. Some say it's nature, some say it's fate, some say it's activities, some say it's the Supreme Lord. Is God the cause of our suffering enjoyment? People are very much, what we say, enthusiastic to blame God when things go wrong. Yes, the materialist. And they like to think that when things go right, they give themselves credit. God gets nothing. He gets blamed, and you know there's a last name for God that people like to use, which I won't mention. You probably all know it, and they use that word very, let me say, regularly when things don't go right, or according to their understanding. But material nature never works according to their desires. Material works according to Krishna says. Everything is working under my direction. He puts the thing in motion. He sets up the system. But he's not the cause of the results of your activities. Whatever activities you do, either material, when it's material, we're under the influence of the external energy. When it's spiritual, we're under the influence of the Daivi Shakti, the spiritual energy. So how does that affect devotees? Do devotees have karma? Sometimes this question comes up. The devotees are actually still under the influence of karma. We're engaged in devotional service. No, if one is taking shelter of the Daivi Prakriti, or the spiritual energy, that is taken charge by the internal energy of the Lord, directly. But still, there is what we say, the residue of previous karma that is still coming, and is given in a token way. It's not given in the full sense of the karma. Prabhupada mentions this. He said, in your last life you may have been a murderer. So according to Manu Samhita, according to Shastra, a life for a life. Prabhupada says in some other part, it was interesting, he says, Krishna tells this person, this man killed you in the last life, you kill him in this life. Prabhupada's explaining how Super Soul works in such a way is that person seems to be doing this person something to this person, but actually he's simply getting his karmic reaction, and that person is just the instrument, that's all. As Prabhupada used to say, don't be disturbed by the instrument of your karma. Or don't blame the perpetrator for what is coming by way of what is due. So how does a devotee see that? This is a very difficult philosophical point, because even within spiritual philosophical understandings, how do we understand how things are happening in the ultimate sense? Is it karma? Is it the Lord? Is it mercy that's coming just by grace? Or is it so difficult to understand? And in fact, it's impossible to understand. But at least we know the principle. Now, if we take shelter under the spiritual energy, whatever happens to us is purification. That's all. The body sees it as purification or a opportunity to understand some philosophical point that will give the devotee, what we say, progress on this path. Krishna gives us knowledge and detachment through the process of devotional service. He detaches us by purifying us. So, here's that whole discussion in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Maharaj Parikshit sees, you know, Kali beating the legs of this bull. The bull is, three legs of his legs are broken. One he's standing on, simply on one leg left. And finally, Maharaj Parikshit chastises Kali. And then he turns to the bull and he says, well, who's the cause of your suffering? And the bull doesn't give an answer. He says, the same thing that's being said here. Some people say it's nature, some people say it's fate, some people say it's karma, some people say it's the supreme, some people say it's by chance. And then finally, after going through everything, he says that anyone who says that this person is the cause, they also get the same reaction. He says the perpetrator of the crime becomes what we say as the indicator of the perpetrator becomes just as much responsible for the activity as the person who performs the activity. That's heavy. So if you blame somebody for something, in the ultimate sense, you also get a reaction for that. How do you deal with that? Where does justice come in? Dhruva Maharaj, he's reacting to a yaksha who killed his brother. So should he say, well, that yaksha, my brother deserved it, and the yaksha is simply an instrument? Would he be right in doing that? Good question. Or he took action and retaliated and gave, what we say, the perpetrator a reaction. So as a king, he's in the position of a king. It's his duty to keep law and order. So from that point of view, he was acting. But when he went beyond and simply killed the yakshas wholesale, he put himself in a situation where he was outside of real kshatriya responsibility and duty. And then he was taken into account by Manu, who was preaching to him about the philosophy that governs activity here. But ultimately, Dhruva was not wrong for chastising the miscreants, because the miscreants must be chastised, but at the same time, the miscreants is simply a perpetrator is responsible for what happened, is carrying out what is supposed to be carried out by the laws of material nature. So every day, we find ourselves sometimes in situations like that. So how do we deal with that? Trinadapi sunichena tayori vasa hishnina amani namamanadena kirtaniya siddharahi. Nothing can happen without the sanction of the Lord. For a devotee accepts everything as the mercy of the Lord. But accepting things as the mercy of the Lord means to try to understand how to take advantage of the circumstance. Krishna sometimes is teaching us through a situation. He is, or he's purifying us through a situation. We may not exactly see that. Why this person is acting that way towards me, or why am I acting towards that person that way? There's a reason behind it that is not always prominent in the activity itself. So a devotee is thoughtful. A devotee is thoughtful. A devotee tries to see the hand of the Lord in everything. But that doesn't mean we don't react sometimes. It's like if somebody comes and starts causing a disturbance, and you might say, well, he's sent by God to cause a disturbance. Does that make sense? But still, you have to deal with that. You have to stop the disturbance. But at the same time, there's a reason why the disturbance happened. As Prabhupada was talking about this, it's really a funny how Prabhupada deals with these questions. It's kind of humorous. But it's really deep in understanding. He was saying, nothing happens without a cost. Nothing. So one devotee said, I walked into the shower, I was taking a shower, and the shower piece fell off and hit me on the head. So Prabhupada said, because you were a rascal, that's what happened. He said, your rascal tongue was the cause of the shower thing falling. So what is this saying? Is that consciousness also moves material energy. Not also, it does move material energy. So consciousness works in such a way as to propel material energy to act in certain ways. So what is the bottom line? Change consciousness, or purify consciousness and become Krishna conscious. Then one can see everything in relationship to the Lord. When we're not fully Krishna consciousness, we become bewildered. Or at least we're not taking shelter of the principles that govern this, that govern activities that are in line with devotional service. We simply see things separate. There's a reason for everything. But also there's a message in everything. Ultimately, what Krishna is doing for a devotee who is fully surrendered in devotional service, he's bringing them to his lotus feet in various ways. He has his means to do that, and he uses the material energy, but for a devotee it's not material energy, it's the spirit. It's the material energy being used by the hands of the source of the material energy, Krishna himself. And he's aligning that energy in such a way as to purify. So a devotee never is, what we say, in anxiety about what has happened. They see, understand. They accept everything as the mercy of the Lord, coming for the Lord, and there's a reason behind that. So that is what, and Prabhupada says, basically, essentially, foundationally, everything is based on desire. But desires can be mixed. In fact, that is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with day-to-day with mixed desires. Unless we've reached the stage of pure devotional service or purified consciousness, there's tendencies for material thinking or material activities. So we want to be Krishna conscious, but still, these material tendencies and these opportunities to fulfill material desires also can. So our desires are mixed. So reactions are coming in the same way, in the mixed way. But there's an element called mercy. What's the difference between grace and mercy? You hear these two terms. Mercy means something that is coming simply by your activities. Your activities bring about the mercy. And grace means something that you get even if your activities are not in line with receiving mercy. That is special. Therefore, in the element of karma, grace can work in such a way as to, when we say, eradicate the reactions of one's karma. Krishna can simply do that if he wants. He can show special mercy. Lord Chaitanya did that when he was here. He speeded up. Sometimes we do read in Chaitanya Charitamrita how Lord Chaitanya gave love of God to someone immediately from the most difficult and degraded situation. Gave it to Jagai and Marai. They were the lowest of the low. He gave them love of God. When Lord Chaitanya brought them back into the association of all the devotees, he said, you should see them as purified. He said, you don't see them anymore the way they were. They are purified from all material desires and material activities. So he speeded up. And he also speeded up the reactions of sinful activities. We see how, you know, Gopal Chapala, when he committed an offense to Sri Vastakur, immediately, within a day or so, he got leprosy. Heavy Vaishnava aparad. When Gopal Chakravarti did that to Srila Haridas Thakur, criticizing Haridas Thakur, immediately, within a day or so, he had leprosy. So Lord Chaitanya wanted to teach the principles in a very clear way while he was here, but those same principles work in a more extended way now. So you might say, well, you know, I offended so many Vaishnavas and I don't have leprosy. Well, just wait. It'll come. That's if you leave Krishna consciousness. But if you stay in Krishna consciousness, you can get forgiven. So don't leave. But that's how it works. Lord Chaitanya speeded up both the mercy and the reactions just to teach his philosophy clearly while he was there and to set the standard for all time. So therefore, there is that element of mercy. Therefore, a devotee always prays, my dear Lord, I am so fallen, I am so sinful, I am so uninclined to devote. By your mercy, you can destroy these tendencies. And if we pray like that, the Lord can do that immediately. If we sincerely pray, then we can purify our desire and become what we say, get pure desire. Or Krishna consciousness, that desire which is free from all personal motivations. As long as the conditioned soul still has tendencies for material life, the happiness of Krishna consciousness is coming and going. It's not constant. Therefore, we have to be free from any tendency to try to find any happiness in the material world. There is no happiness here. Okay. Questions. Is there any questions or comments? The microphone is here. Yes, people?
That example you gave of, I've been quoting Srila Prabhupada, that a person murders somebody in the next life, the victim gets the opportunity to murder that person.
Yeah.
So they may be acting as the instrument,
yeah,
but don't they also get a reaction like continuing the cycle? It's not that the karmic cycle ends there.
Yeah, it keeps going. It keeps going until one comes to devotional service. So Prabhupada uses a similar. He says that you may have been a murderer in your last life. You come to Krishna consciousness, you cut your finger. So the reaction is minimized down to the very least, just to give a little bit of a token. So the devotee is free from the karmic reaction because they've taken shelter of Krishna's pure devotee and therefore taken shelter of pure devotional service. So that reaction is minimized. But for a materialist, still gets the full force of his karma. There's no way around that. Yes, Prabhu?
We learn that there are six aggressors that...
Six?
Aggressors.
Oh, yes.
Aggressors that can be killed without any karmic reactions. So my question is, are they supposed to be killed or can they be killed? I mean, should we do it? Should we kill these types of aggressors?
You better not, no. I suggest you don't do it. I strongly suggest you don't do it. I mean, you may feel like doing it, but don't do it. Now, Lord Chaitanya has taken devotional service to another level. I mean, he could have killed Jagai and Madai. It was easy. He was about to do it. But Lord Nityananda reminded him that in this age, everyone is like that. So he wanted to give him... Killing means killing the mentality. So I can give you a real-life ISKCON example of this, and because I've lived in New Vrindavan, and New Vrindavan is the place where everything possibly happened, that could possibly happen. It's a place where there was so much other things going on besides Krishna consciousness. But anyway, one person, his wife was, you know, another man was coming to his wife. He was really angry. He said, he came to the community leader. He said, I want to kill him. He's coming to him. He's having relationships with my wife. The community leader says, it says in the Shastras you can do that, but you better not do that, because this is the law of the land. So we follow the law of the land. There'll be a very bad reaction. But he went through and found someone else to do it, and the guy got killed. And then the whole community went up in the air. So many scandals, so many difficulties because of that. So, you know, and then that person who did it went to jail, and so many problems after that. And that went on for years. We had to deal with that. So you might say, well, that person was right, but in the sense that what we do, we have to deal with the law. So the law doesn't really allow you to take things into your own hands. So in order to not to cause difficulty within the society of devotees, and we follow the laws of the land. So a person can be captured and can be punished like that. You can kill in self-defense. That happens sometimes. But even a devotee doesn't try to. He simply tries to protect himself. But within the Shastric principles, yes, it is. But the laws of the land don't allow us to do that without a heavy reaction. Okay. Yes, Sureshwara Prabhu.
Maharaj, you made a distinction between grace and mercy. I didn't quite get it. Could you?
Yeah, Prabhupada said it. Someone asked him, what's the difference between grace and mercy? Mercy is something that, you know, you do something and you access the mercy. You chant the holy names, you get mercy. You serve Vaishnavas, you get mercy. You take prasadam, you follow the process, you're getting mercy. But grace comes just of its own accord, without any, it's completely causeless. Sometimes we say causeless mercy too, but causeless mercy means there is a cause you can't see. That's basically what it is. But grace is, you know, if a pure devotee wants to show some kindness to a person, he can do that. Even if the person is not even worthy of getting any kindness, can show him some compassion, something. That's okay. Grace.
It's a good example for me of how Prabhupada uses terms in different ways, and we always have to examine the context, otherwise we get in these crazy semantic squabbles. So, thank you.
Yeah. I heard that directly from Srila Prabhupada. Any other questions? Oh, Janani Vas Prabhu.
It's a comment, if I may comment.
Yes.
From what you already said, that it was very nice class, and these points, that there was an example of Madhusavita Prabhu was telling the story. Madhusavita Prabhu. Mm-hmm. And he asked Srila Prabhupada, so the devotees, they come under the protection of the internal potency. And Prabhupada said, no. So then he rephrased the question and said the same thing again, but the but Prabhupada, this Krishna says the devotees come under the protection of the divine energy, the spiritual potency. And Prabhupada says no, he says they come under the material energy, but Krishna personally is directing it from the material energy. But as long as they're here and we still have material attachments, then we still go along but according to the material laws, but Krishna, he intervenes by after performing devotional service.
Hmm. He changes that energy into spiritual. He changes the as Krishna intervenes, then one is getting the shelter of Krishna through that. Or one is Krishna's hand directly.
Yeah.
As opposed to just the material energy which works under Krishna's representatives, the demigods in various apartments.
Yeah, when the devotees become purified, then they can appreciate. They can experience the spiritual energy. Yeah. But even if they're not completely purified or performing devotional service, they can't perceive the spiritual energy. But Krishna's making the material energy act, so there's no reactions for them.
Okay, I have a question. Is the material energy active within the Holy Dham?
In the Holy Dham?
Yeah. Is there any influence of the material energy here? Proto-Maya?
What?
Proto-Maya? She's the Mahamaya, right?
Not Proto-Maya, it's the internal potency.
The internal potency, yeah. So when you're in the Dham, are you getting any, let me say, reactions from your activities that are under the influence of the material energy in any way, either goodness, passion, or ignorance? I'm sincerely asking this question. It's not like I know the answer. I'm just asking. Yes. Somebody.
I'm not saying that I know the answer to that question, but I know that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in Dharma Dharma that a devotee, even in the initial state...
This is the Dham now.
Yeah.
We're not talking outside of the Dham. We're talking...
Well, this is must what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says about this point must especially be true in the Holy Dham. Mm-hmm. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says a devotee in the initial state, all karma is gone, and whatever reactions he gets is given to him personally by Krishna. Not as a form of because Krishna wants to punish this devotee, but out of love, because Krishna wants to rectify his false mentality.
Okay, so, but my question is: is there any influence of the three modes here?
But how can it be when we are all devotees and there's not karma? It's Krishna personally giving us the reactions.
Yeah. Is there any influence of the three modes here at all? Well, not individually, just philosophically. Is the modes at all, are the modes completely at bay in the Dham?
So there's a thin layer of material covering even in the Dham. And this is what makes you, whether you are qualified to stay in the Dham or not. Otherwise, everyone will go for an easy ride here.
There's a material covering over the Dham, and we somehow or other still plug into that. But the Dham is the Dham. So whether you're in the Dham or not in the Dham is not whether you're in here or not here. It's whether your consciousness is here or not. You have to make Dham consciousness align with Dham location. Bring the consciousness into the location. So yeah, the material energy is covering the real Dham, but we can either be in the Dham or we can be situated on that covering and still be apparently in the Dham. And so therefore, we're still situated on that covering, still it appears we're getting the reactions from the modes.
So Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says in the Navadidham, there's no question of the modes of material nature in the Dham. Mm. It's completely free. But the
covering. Yeah.
Now, in the spiritual realm, there's no question of being in the modes of material nature.
Right.
It's descended from the spiritual realm.
Right. Dham's none different than Krishna.
Yeah. And Jagannath told Ramanuja when he sent him there that if you think this is any material, is a material place here, your devotion will diminish day by day. So there's a common saying that the only thing that's material in the Dham is the consciousness of the person who thinks it's material.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's all based on, it's all decided by wrong consciousness, yes.
Maharaj, I have one point. Like the Pandavas and Prahlad Maharaj, they go through quite some hardships. Now, on what category it comes in that?
What was the
Pandavas? They became homeless and they had to go through so many ups and downs in their life. What category do they come into?
Krishna wanted to share the glories of his pure devotees. He was glorifying. Bhishma was crying at the end on the battlefield, feeling such pain within his heart and mind. How much the Pandavas were dedicated to Krishna, yet they lost their kingdom, their wife was insulted. They were tried to be killed in so many ways. But ultimately, because they were the Lord's devotees, the Lord was actually just showing the world the glories of their devotional service. And ultimately, He protected them through all that.
That means the devotee has to be tolerant.
Yeah. Tolerance is the basic principle of spiritual activity. Lord Chaitanya gives the formula for how to perform devotional service. Humility, tolerance, pridelessness, and respect for others. Without practicing this verse, one cannot make any advancement. It's essential. Lord Chaitanya says, take that verse, Krishna Das Kaviraj says, take that verse, string it on the necklace of the holy name and wear it as your ornament. See, this is essential. So tolerance is a very high principle of spiritual practice.
It looks like this is the shanti which we want, peaceful mind. The Krishna explains, Bhoktaramikatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram surya sarvabhutanam. That is related to Trinadavya Sunichana. If you want absolute peace, then you have to absolutely tolerate everything.
You have to tolerate, you have to take shelter. Without taking shelter, tolerance itself is not so nice. Doesn't make you happy just to tolerate. You have to take shelter. But one thing, I'll end the class with this statement. If we can learn the one thing, things don't usually work according to our vision. People are still trying to align life to make it happen according to their plans. Forget it. Make it happen according to Krishna's plan and align your plan with Krishna's plan and you'll always be in the best position. We make our plans, what? To serve Krishna, to surrender to Krishna, to engage in devotional service. Our material plans, we can make them, whether they happen or don't happen or how they may manifest, that's up to higher powers. Don't worry about those things so much. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.